Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. I'm Hadi. Mr. Broussard, if you felt a little overwhelmed, this was an overwhelmed day for me.
Oh, yeah, it was an overwhelming day for you.
Yeah, and you know, better days are coming.
Mercury is about to be out of retrograde.
Yes, and I'm so glad that you told me that, because the thing is that even though I was feeling overwhelmed today, it's like I go to sleep and I wake up reinvigorated for the new day that's to come.
Yes. Oh, sleep? I really took, whoopsies. And this is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black. And I was going to say, I just feel like I took sleep for granted when I was younger.
Oh, woo!
And I still think we're in a space where people take sleep for granted.
Yes.
But sleep is important. 7 to 9 hours. So my update for today, I'm a little tired because I don't know if y'all have ever been to Solid Core. There's like a whole bunch, well, in metropolitan areas, definitely in D.C. And I've gone like twice before, but this time... Yo, I'm really tired right now. And it's only like a 50-minute class. But for those that don't know, you should just, you know, just look it up. Formulate your own opinion on it. I just know I feel like I'm definitely stronger than I used to be. But I'm like, I need to push myself harder in these workouts. It's crazy. But I had a lot of energy today because my school was closed today.
What?
My school was closed today because due to the coronavirus.
Yes.
It's not shut down. They just closed it for sanitation purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's getting really crazy. It's really getting close. We're closed today and then we go back to school tomorrow. And next week, listeners, we are going to have an episode about the coronavirus and how it is impacting schools across the nation, across the world, really. So just stay tuned for that.
Seriously. And it's so interesting. I feel like also because I'm in HR now. Wow, that sounds so weird. It's like I've been monitoring the situation so closely because all the employees are like, Jihad, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to close? And it's like,
interesting.
A, I don't make that call. That's not
you
my
don't.
Job. But it would be great if I could, you know, like, It reminds me of teaching days when I wanted to call it a day when snow was even on the horizon.
We didn't have a snow day this year. That's
right?
Crazy.
Oh my goodness. I used to look forward to those. But my update.
Yes. Do you have one?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Really quick. So, I just wanted to say shout out to all the Black women. I know it's Women's History Month.
And woo!
I know that we rolled out of Black History Month, but we're rolling into Women's History Month. But I just want to continue to just say thank you for all that you all do. Y'all are amazing. Y'all are beautiful. Y'all are literally the reason as to why Black men are what we are today. So thank you so much.
Shout out to the Black women.
Yes, shout out all Black women. Speaking of amazing Black women, take a listen to an ad about yet another Black woman who's bringing light and awareness to mental health, self-care, and so much more.
Cut the noise. Cut the noise. Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, a queen of unboxings, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Keon Cole. Let me spell it out for you. KianaCole. You can also find Kicking It With Key on Instagram at KickingItWithKey_. I'm going to spell that out for you too. KICKINITWITHKI_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life.
Do 1987 marked the very first year that March was dubbed the month to celebrate women's history. Similar to Black History Month, women's history was previously only given a week to be celebrated. So because this is our first episode in March, our segments this week are centered around women. Ms. Black, kicking it off for you.
So we're going to start with We Love the Kids.
Yes.
I had a very special moment. I think it was like 2 months ago. But as I said before, I've taught my fifth grade class for 3 years. And I have one of my little Aquarius buddies. She came up to me. It was like a Monday. She's like, Miss Black, I was in pain all weekend. I'm like, okay. Like, she seemed like she was like trying to be funny. It was a week. It was a different energy from her. And so I'm like, okay, what happened? She's like, I got my period. I was like, and I hugged her and I was like, oh my gosh, welcome to the club. Like, this is amazing. This is good because I really wanted her to feel good about it. And right. You know, now she has this purse where she keeps her pads in and stuff. And I'm like, wow, like, I just feel like, I feel like I raised you. Yes. And like, now you are blossoming. And it is, it is just so beautiful. And I love women and I love little women. Unfortunately, though, you know, I just hope that our periods don't start sinking. For those that know what that means, you know what I mean. But what's really cool is after she told me that, I was like looking up articles about periods because we should normalize them and have a lot of conversation around them. In Scotland, they're on their way to be the first nation to make sanitary wipe products freely available to all women.
Wow.
It's about to cost a pretty penny, though.
Oh, how much?
They're saying about like $31.2 million to be, so that all like sanitary products are made accessible in like open spaces, like community centers and like youth clubs. I think it's really cool though.
That's incredible. And I think that like, even thinking about like how the evolution of us being like a more progressive society, I just don't understand why we've been in this world where women have to pay more for everything.
For everything.
And so every time my friends, I'm friends with a lot of women, beautiful Black women.
Hello.
And they're always like, Jai, you are so lucky. And I'm like, you know what? I am. You're right.
You are so lucky.
I can't take it. I wish I could take your pain for a day. But and that's what I said.
We wish you could too. We wish you could too. So shout out to little girls.
Yes.
Starting their menstruation cycle. Yes. Shout out to women.
Yes.
So then our second segment is two sets of notes. And as you may remember, this part is where we'll highlight something current and provide our second set of notes with the teacher's lens. So what's also really cool, women are really, we're moving up in terms of our, what I think are human rights, but go figure. The Department of Education is to provide lactation rooms in New York schools to students who are parenting.
Yes.
Like what?
I love that.
It's crazy because when I first listened to it and then I read about it, I was like, this seems like such an innovative idea.
Right.
But it's like, it's not an innovative idea.
Not at all.
It's a necessity.
Yes.
So their goal is to make a reasonable effort to find a lactation space within these schools. It must be a sanitary space. Other than a restroom.
Yes.
It's to be shielded from view and free from intrusion. It should include an electrical outlet, flat surface, and a chair. And the student should have access to running water and a refrigerator to store. And I just thought that was really great that they're trying to make schools more accessible for women. More accessible for women who have babies. Because I just know in my experience, I was in high school and I had and two friends, we were a trio and we were like thick as thieves, but one of them got pregnant and they made her leave the school. They made her go to a continuation school.
What?
So it's very, very common, or was very, very common. I don't know the exact data now, but very common for women who become pregnant to be asked to leave the school. Or highly suggested, and people don't know that you can say no to it.
Right.
So this is a great step in the right direction.
And, you know, and I think that just to go back to the fact that they not only are bringing lactation rooms, but there are actual standards. Like there are specific expectations that are lined out for what is needed in these rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that oftentimes, like we get into education policy, we talk about like, oh, okay, like let's just throw this idea out there, but there's not enough intentionality that goes into what is actually needed for these spaces. So shout out to New York. And I hope that all of these lactate, I can't wait to see like what it actually looks like. And
yeah, I would just also like to add though, like it is a good, like this is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
I just want to make sure that schools are actually abiding by the standards because in workplaces right now, they're supposed to have these standards. But I know I have a teacher friend at school. Shout out to Ms. Fairfax. We call her the cow because she, you know, she pumps and she puts up a cow sign. But she was telling me about, I don't know if she's like in a group on Facebook or something like that, but she was telling me about how a woman who works at a school has been like walked in on like multiple times because there's no secure lock on the door or they're being asked to pump in the bathroom because that's the only space that people have to provide. And they have to like walk to a refrigerator with their breast milk in their hands. Like that's totally unacceptable. That's what's happening in spaces now. So I hope that when they do provide these lactation rooms in schools that they're taking that into consideration and making sure they're abiding by their policy, clearly, because it's out there.
Exactly. I love that. And these schools got to do better.
Yes.
Especially for staff. Like, goodness, teachers, we always just get the short end
of the stick. But normalize breastfeeding.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So today we're going to be talking about public schools versus charter schools. This is going to be extremely informational, but we will be providing our personal insight and experiences with the two. So let's talk about how these two entities are similar first. They are both public schools. Charter schools and traditional public schools are both free, and there can't be any type of discrimination against students that admit to their schools, and they both receive state funding. Just as a disclaimer, we both have most of our experience in charter schools. So as we walk you through the differences here, you'll hear Lynn's talking majority about the charter schools, and I'll be talking more so about public schools.
All right, so let's get started with what charter schools are. So charter schools are public schools that are independent of school districts through contracts with state or local boards. So they are required to produce a charter, which is like a list of policy and regulations that they promise to abide by. Which include a lot of different pieces and a lot of different people. And then that does have to be approved. And then they their charter is approved and they're able to create a school behind it.
And so about public schools, traditional public schools are tied to school districts and set their curriculum based on state education standards. So because they have to meet these state education standards, they are not exempt from any type of state, federal or local laws regarding education. So they have to listen to everything that the school district says, and they are essentially run by a democratically elected school board.
Hopping back over to charter schools. The basic concept of charter schools is that they exercise increased autonomy in return for greater accountability. So in layman's terms, they get more flexibility with what they want to do, but they actually have to kind of abide by stricter rules that they've already set out. As public schools, charter schools are open to all children. They do not require entrance exams. They cannot charge tuition, and they must participate in state testing and federal accountability programs. The schools draw up in their own charter, which I said before, is a set of rules and performance standards that they are held accountable to. Our first question to help you better understand the difference between charter schools and traditional public schools is, do you have to be certified to teach at these schools? So we're going to highlight the different teacher certification. So for charter schools, teachers actually don't necessarily have to be certified, but this differs from state to state.
And for public schools, teachers must be certified by the State Education Board.
Period.
Yes.
Just throwing it out there that I work at a charter school, but I am certified by DC, so I can teach at a public school. Just wanted to throw that out there to everybody. It's crazy, though, to really think that, like, a lot of people are into charter schools because you get school choice. You can decide if your kid goes really to any school, right? But when we think about teacher certification, teachers don't have to have a certification. So teachers don't actually have to, in some spaces, let me talk about DC, don't have to have experience in education to be a teacher. That sounds crazy.
It's very crazy, honestly. Because I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but to become a mechanic, do you have to...
I don't even know. Right.
But it's just like, right. the serious question is like, what do you need to do in other professions? Like, to become a doctor, do you have to go to school and study to become a lawyer? Like, yes, there's an apprenticeship, but you have to go... Like, you have to be extremely intentional about a lot of other professions outside of teaching. Mm-hmm. And it's so problematic because there's not a consistent standard for all the states for educators to meet, which is saying that essentially education is not valued. And then it's also saying that
in America,
right. But which is also saying that teachers can meet literally different expectations or no expectation at all to become an educator outside of graduating, I think, from a university. Oh, but I've been in schools where you didn't even have to graduate from a university. You're still able to become a student.
So with charter schools, it's interesting because because there's more flexibility, right? You can have a PE teacher that has not necessarily gone through college, right? But they've done so good with behavior management and PE and whatever secondhand curriculum y'all be giving PE teachers. I don't know what it is, but maybe they were good at delivering that. So now you're like, hey, actually, because you're already in our network, you're eligible to be a teacher assistant in the second grade classroom, even though you've had no experience with actually teaching that content or have gone to school for that. Then maybe you're doing that well for a year. And now they're like, hey, because you've been in our network and you've had this experience, you can now teach the second grade class. You can be the head teacher. So it's like, y'all, of course, like y'all getting some experience within that, not even the network, sometimes within that one building.
Right.
But now we've dubbed you with your lack of like actual schooling around how to teach. Now you're able to be a teacher, and that would never happen in a public school. Although I have seen in public schools where if a practice is an assessment that you have to take to be certified. So if in a public school, I have met somebody before who's like I think he was taking classes, mm-hmm. but he had his practice scheduled already. And so once you have this, when you have the intent, they give you, and you can prove your intent, they give you 2 years. Right, exactly.
They give you a provisional license. And so because I did Teacher America, your first 2 years, I want to say, are under a provisional license. And then after, you can test into some type mm-hmm. of, whatever the LEAs, the local education agency, whatever there's, state or government approval board is, that's who then will decide if you can get your teacher's license after you take the whatever additional mm-hmm. test. And so like, for instance, like right now I'm in my master's program at Howard. And so I literally just took my PLT, which is the last test in my certification jar is what I'll call it. so that I'm able to have my teaching certification so I can mm-hmm. teach. I want to say I'll be certified to teach K through 6 special education. So, yes, sped. But yeah, I think that we just have to do. That's something that really disappoints me. I just think that this is an ongoing conversation I need to have. Is like, creating a consistent standard, a consistent expectation on what is needed to become an educator. Because literally, all other professions, it's consistent. It's across the board. You have to pass your boards to become a doctor, and you have to pass the bar exam to become a lawyer. So if that's the case, then why isn't that the case for
teaching?
Yeah.
And it's not to say, like, I don't want people going into these charter schools and side-eyeing people like, oh, I don't know if they can teach. but that's just the truth, that sometimes I'm working with people who really, or I have worked with people who don't know how to teach because you weren't taught how to teach. And the school has a responsibility to teach you how to teach. They ain't going to do that.
Well, that's the other side of it. We haven't really gotten into this, but I've heard of different schools, different networks founding different universities so that they then can teach those teacher assistants mm-hmm. how to be quote unquote teachers. And I'm saying quote unquote because these schools slash these the network universities don't really have the accreditation to do so, but because they're charter schools, they can give these people various credentials that make them seem as if they know what they're doing. And not to say that they don't, but it's just, is that okay? Like,
is it right? Is it okay?
And is it right? And why is it that you're able to do this? Because you're literally creating like arbitrary, like things that are, you're just making up expectations. And that's not necessarily what the educational standards are for the country.
Exactly. Because it's great that there are now, that are some schools or some networks have systems in which they are supporting teachers. That's not in every system, though.
Right.
Very clear.
Exactly.
But it's dangerous in that because then you're being taught one set of notes. Like, you're being taught, you see that right there,
one
baby.
Set of notes.
Baby.
Okay, not to.
You're being taught how to teach in that way.
Right.
And then let's say you want to go somewhere else, there's a lot of friction or a lot of dissonance because you were taught to teach in that way.
Yep.
I got a specific network in mind right now, but
me too.
We can talk about those on a later episode because we're about to move on to question number two.
Yes.
So question number two, how do schools decide what curriculum they will use? So before I give you the charter school and how to get you public, traditional public school, I do want to say that now curriculum is based off of the Common Core state standards. I'm going to say that again. Common Core state standards. Basically, 48 out of the 50 states, I believe that is the exact number, have adopted the Common Core state standards. So these are basically, it's basically a set of criteria for each grade, and it lists out exactly what students are supposed to know by the end of the year in that grade. So it's basically just to level the playing field for kids across the nation so that they have the same opportunities for college and career. So the curriculum is, these curriculums are built from those standards if these schools are in those states. Just wanted to say that. So for a charter school, curriculum is very flexible, but the school is still held accountable to a performance contract, which is usually listed somewhere within their charter.
And for a traditional public school, curriculum is decided by the state education board, and it's implemented by the school districts. So this is another one of those kind of like touchy subjects for me, I feel like. And I was having a conversation with my professor last week about this because we were talking about Eureka. And
woo!
Right.
That's the math I teach.
Right. And to me, when I was teaching Eureka, I'm not gonna lie, I was extremely confused. And the thing is that trying to teach Eureka to students who are on the spectrum, I was a special educator, and trying to use Eureka for special education students was a little more challenging for me when there were so many gaps that I was trying to build on or establish or give help them fill those gaps before we get to
Eureka is
the multiple concepts.
Yeah, I'm not trying to put a particular set of students in a box by any means.
Right.
Because I don't think that Eureka is really for my mid students sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not. Like, it's just a very rigorous curriculum. Eureka's hard. Because you have to teach it to yourself.
Exactly.
And then once you learn it, that lesson is built for a student, one who's always had the Eureka curriculum.
Exactly.
And who is on grade level. So now you then have to reteach yourself how to scaffold it back.
Exactly. And then on top of that, I'll be honest, like when I first discovered Eureka, I was like, oh my goodness, this is lit. Because because of the multiple strategies, I fell in love with it because I felt like as a student, when I was growing up, and I kind of was placed into this box of the teacher teaching me and the strategy that the teacher is giving me, that's the only way to solve these problems.
Yeah.
Whereas Eureka gives you more variety so that you can solve whatever problem that you're trying to solve. Yeah. And I think that that's what, had I had that as a student, I feel like I would have been a little more inclined to like pursue some type of STEM field to know that there was other ways to solve things. But when you just don't get it and it's not making, you can't make that connection and you're talking to your teacher, you're like, okay, like this is just really not working for me. What do you do?
Right, what do you do? Before it was like, just keep doing it.
Right.
Keep on fighting a good fight.
And but that now wasn't it's like, it.
No, now you have some options.
Children. Exactly. Like, let's try this. Or let's try this.
Right. There's always something to try, which is why I enjoy being a math teacher because I realized Eureka curriculum helped me learn how to teach math, but I know Eureka isn't the only way I teach math, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's like I know how to piece it now. I'd also like to add, did you have something more to add about Eureka?
No.
Okay. I would also like to add, in terms of the flexibility around curriculum with charter schools specifically, charter schools can choose the curriculum that they want. Like that school can choose it. But like with public schools, the state board decides what curriculum those schools are using. So they have to use that. They can make modifications to it, but they have to use that. Now with charter schools, there are some schools like KIPP is a very popular monopoly charter school, and they create their own curriculum. So they have a whole curriculum team that is literally typed out in scripted lessons instead of purchasing it from somewhere else, because they just have the money to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But their curriculum that they made, like I said before, is still based on the Common Core state standards. So it's cool that they have that flexibility, but I've spoken to a teacher who's like worked at KIPP before, and it's just very different from Eureka.
Right.
It's more like drill the skill. Now try to apply some conceptual understanding to it, which I do think works with some mathematical concepts.
Mm-hmm.
But Eureka is like, here's a concept. Let's work with it.
Right.
Yikes.
Explore,
but get it right at the end.
Right. I don't care how you get it right, you get it right.
Right.
It'll work from there. Right. And I think that talking or getting to like the other side of like literacy, and I remember that you used to teach literacy.
Yeah.
Right. But like, I was really curious to know, how did you feel? Because that's the other side of it for me, is like trying to figure out like, oh, okay, like what should be taught when? And I feel like charter schools have that kind of that ability to be able to say, oh, okay, like our second through third graders are going to learn this writing curriculum, and then they're not going to get writing for another 2 years.
Yeah.
Or the other way around.
I forgot about
that. K through third
piece.
Graders aren't going to. And I remember when I was in, I felt like this is what I'm going to be saying the whole episode. I remember when I was in elementary school.
Right.
But
it's important, though.
Yeah. Like, I remember learning writing. Like, I remember learning how to write sentences
and so, phonics.
Yeah.
How to pronounce words.
Yeah. And I will say that one of the best curriculums that, and it takes a lot, is Wilson. On that curriculum, if you ever have a student that is struggling with reading and you're trying to like really fill those gaps on whether it is phonics, whether it is fluency, whether it is accuracy, the Wilson kit is a very, very, very good curriculum.
Yeah.
But going back to like the picking out of what you do, what subjects you do want to teach and what subjects you don't want to teach.
Yeah.
I didn't really appreciate that because I feel like you're disenfranchising a community in the process
of
deciding that.
Because it's like your decision is based off of your assumption. And sometimes if you're not, lots of times they don't, school admin doesn't include teachers in these conversations. So like you've been so far gone from actually dealing with the kids and you don't even know all the kids' names in my room. Don't get me started on that. Hmm. So like, how can you truly dictate what they need without conversing with their immediate stakeholders?
And I think that's the reason why I feel like we'll get to that in the next topic. But I just think that schools need to be very intentional about the selection of curriculum and even more intentional about the selection of subjects that you're teaching and thinking about it long-term as opposed to, oh, in kindergarten or, oh, in first grade, like, long term, this is our end goal. And as educators, you know, the first thing that you have to do is backwards plan, backwards map. So you know your end goal, but how are you going to get there?
How are you going to get there? Yeah.
So our next question is, who is holding these schools accountable to teach our kids?
Doo-doo. Charter schools. Let's talk about it. So they're independently run. as we mentioned before, but they must meet the standards outlined in their charter in order to secure state funding. And I know we keep saying that, but that is like the very vital piece, because charter schools have more autonomy, which is common knowledge to people, but it's not so much common knowledge that they have to be held accountable to their charter.
Traditional public schools must adhere to all state school board regulations and laws governed by school districts, which implement the state law, local school board, which are elected, and they run the district. And this is kind of what I was getting at in the last kind of question around curriculum, is who's deciding what? And then not only that, but who is holding these folks accountable for when they fall short of the need? Because, cool, this school came and they were a charter school and they decided that they wanted to use this curriculum and that curriculum. But if that doesn't work, and that school then uses a different curriculum every year since its inception, mm-hmm. who then goes to say that, like, this is wrong, this is not okay, and we probably should make sure that there's a lot more oversight at this school? Because I don't mm-hmm. think that for public schools, there it's kind of like a general scheme that these public schools have to follow mm-hmm. as far as like the subjects that they're teaching, and it's a lot more consistency. But with charter schools, they can do whatever they want, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I'm like,
That reminds me, because my CEO had made a comment because we take a standardized assessment called the PARC here in DC. And our CEO made a comment about how our math PARC scores decreased. Mm-hmm. Right? Shot to the heart. But our math PARC scores decreased. But he also noticed that that's a trend across DC charter schools. But the trending curriculum across DC charter schools is Eureka, right? So it just leads us to question, like, is this the right curriculum? But then can you really decide if something is right if you just changed it 3 years ago? Because, like, you can't, like, sometimes there's an immediate, like, oh, we got to stop. Like, right. This is crazy. We're not making any gains off of this, right? But then there's also just the nature of trying something new, in that you actually have to try it for a period of time.
Exactly.
For the data to be valid.
But the issue in that, though, is school leaders who don't traditionally go through traditional teaching programs oftentimes don't know that when that situation happens, put an action research plan in place so that you can truly identify the root cause of the issue, as opposed to you literally just trying to say, oh, okay, this curriculum isn't working. So, or not even saying that the curriculum is, scores decrease, so it must be this. Like, there's right. actually yeah. no, it could be the test. It could be the test. It could be the standards.
Like, we'll never know, because we're not allowed to see the questions, but okay. Yeah, the data analysis, there's like steps that are missed in it. And it's funny, because I realized that's one of my growth as a teacher, is like being mm-hmm. able to analyze the data and then like a plan to implement what I noticed. I think that's missed.
Yeah. It's missed. And I will say, my first year of teaching, when I sat down with those literacy, the running records, and sat down with like printing out all those things and like going over and actually like dissecting the data, mm-hmm. that was the best part of my teaching experience, because it wasn't just, mm-hmm. it was so objective, and I appreciated that. It wasn't about, there was no subjectivity at all. And don't get me wrong, like trying to teach those skills was a challenge. But at the same time, it just was I just felt very like affirmed with knowing that mm-hmm. the reason why I'm here is so important, and this is how I'm going to plug these gaps.
There was some immediate gratification.
Absolutely.
One, I thought running records were fun, because, you know, you hear them say the word, you get to put the little mark.
Right.
It was like a little game. But
it's like your own teacher language.
Your own teacher language, right. And then you immediately got to see what was wrong.
Right.
Which is I was going to say it's easier in younger grades, because I was going to imply that comprehension is not as important in younger grades. That's not what I meant. It's just like, ideally you're not supposed to be making accuracy issues or fluency issues after third grade.
Right.
Like, so that's not, it shouldn't, running records, we're not doing them in sixth grade unless you need an intervention.
Right. And just to give y'all some context about what a running record is. Oh, so a running record is literally when you're reading a book, think about just literally taking that page out of that book and printing it out. So while your teacher would give you that page out of that book, they would be literally going through that page. And if you stutter over a word, or if you mispronounce a word, or if you substitute a word, that's what a running record is. That teacher is literally going through that and kind of proofreading what you're reading and adding those, like.
Yeah, the teacher has the exact same copy as you.
Exactly.
You're reading it, but the teacher is making these small little marks over every word to ensure that you said it right or substituted, like Jahad just said. So you guys both have two copies. Wow. We've derailed.
Back on topic.
Well, essentially, that was the last question in terms of understanding the differences between charter schools and traditional public schools. Do you have anything like last words to add about the differences or similarities or your experiences?
I think that if there's anything that I must say, and I'm not sure if we've ever talked about this on an episode, but in both, parents and advocates need to be present in both of these spaces and ensure that these schools, public school as well as public charter school, hold these schools accountable. Make sure that they are doing what they need to do. Yeah, because just like Lindsay was talking about with charter schools literally have a charter which lines out whether they're going to be doing project-based learning, whether they're going to be doing more STEM-focused activities, whether they're going to be going on field trips once a month. And these are all of these school policies and procedures are laid out in that document. So read up on it and make sure these schools are hold these schools accountable.
Mm-hmm. I want to add to that. Remember, there is, if you're looking at, especially if you're in DC, there's a thing called the school quality report, and there's one for each public charter school. It's basically like a report card. So you might hear PMF, the performance management framework. So this is essentially a report card of the charter schools, and it gives you more information about the school quality, the academics, the demographics, what's actually what their focus is and what they're actually being rated on. So you'll actually get a clear rating. So some people, if you're searching for a house, you probably saw some of these ratings if you looked up with, charter schools. But definitely, if you're an advocate for students or you're a parent, definitely look at the PMF scores on the school quality reports for different public charter schools.
And then just to build on one last thing, and then you can close this out, Lance. I just wanted to say that for these two different entities, we talked about public schools. That the person that you need to go to if you're trying to advocate on behalf of that school is the city council for DC. And likewise for the charter school movement, if you're going to go advocate for charter schools, or if you have something that you need to say about a charter school, you would go to the public charter school board meeting. And so these are both two different organizations that you would definitely need to do some research on. I want to say that the public charter school board, they have monthly meetings, and I'm sure that the city council does the same thing.
And that is the difference between a charter school and a traditional public school.
This week's call to action is for you to tell someone to subscribe to our podcast. It's almost common knowledge now that our education system needs to make some major changes, but we need more than just teachers and parents advocating. Everyone needs to get in on this conversation if we expect to see a difference.
If you have any suggestions or feedback you would like to share with us, please shoot us an email at thereformistpipeline@gmail.com. Also, feel free to follow us on Instagram so you can stay up to date at HadyHad. HADYHAD. And you can also follow me at MamaLinds22, MamaLinds22.
Thank y'all so much for listening. Peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!